My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to the 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store. My fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaas to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaas Event Forum, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.
Welcome back to FedWatch. This is a macro show, Bitcoin and macro. We talk about realistic macro and how Bitcoin is going to fit into that. My name is Ansel Linder, and I'm joined by special co-host Nolan Bowerly. How are you doing today?
Ansel, I'm super glad to be here. I learn something new every time I'm on the show. And as a co-host, I hope I can be a proxy for the audience because you're one of the best macro prognosticators and predictors out there. And I think that's the whole fun about macro is predicting, and you make predictions every week. And because I intermittently host with you, I'm able to track the predictions pretty well. And you're ahead of my own ones on price in particular. So there you go.
All right. Well, cool. Thank you very much. Yeah. The macro is about, I picture it like building a framework of how you think the world works and then making predictions from that. Mm-hmm. And then you take that empirical data and fix your framework. So it's not a perfect science at all, but yeah, the show has been quite successful. And thank you for joining. As always, you have a very unique perspective. I would call it like a holistic perspective, where mine is a little bit more maybe nuanced about different things. So we have a big show today. BlackRock is still in the news. People are still talking about it. It's kind of gone out of the headlines and into maybe the podcasts where people are diving down a little bit deeper. So we're going to take a look at a few things about the BlackRock ETF. MicroStrategy bought another tranche of Bitcoin. So we're going to talk about maybe there's a competition between MicroStrategy stacking, BlackRock stacking. Go for it.
But it was particular the way they acquired these ones. It's not the same way. We'll get into it, but I'll save those comments for later, right?
Yeah, awesome. So yeah, also there's another source of stacking that might be coming out, and that's North Carolina is trying to push a bill to study North Carolina stacking Bitcoin. So we're going to take a look at that. And the CBDC debate is still raging on Twitter and elsewhere. So we're going to take a look at what's going on in the CBDC debate, if there's any new developments in central bank digital currencies. But that's all for the intro. Nolan, what do you have up front? Any admin notes?
Well, you know, I missed the breakup this morning because I had some visitors. So we missed a few of the subjects we were going to talk about. And I noticed one of those places, Slovenia, Slovakia, one of the slow countries, they had proposed now a hodling tax incentive. So if you carry over for 1 year, sort of what they do in America, a lot of equities, right? Holding it longer reduces your tax liability. So I had that in the notes and I thought I'd throw it next to the North Carolina situation for context. But we didn't do one this morning. So I know that we spoke a bit about the BIS report yesterday on my show that came out regarding the future of crypto. They really focused on crypto, but we talked a little bit about that on the show last week. But it was kind of funny the way the whole thing was like, oh, we're terrible. We created all these problems with trust. And actually, we have the solutions for the problems we created with trust. Now, I like the BIS guys. They're normally straight shooters as far as the research team goes, but pretty funny argument they put forward.
Yeah, so the first two chapters of the report was about how trust, they're losing trust, but the solution has to involve them because they're so trustworthy.
Yeah,
it was kind of backwards.
It was pretty good.
All right, should we dive into the BlackRock conversation? I think that's the most important one because I think price is everything for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, price tells you how Bitcoin's doing. If it constantly went down for 20 years, no one would care about Bitcoin. So yeah, let's roll into this first clip. It's going to be of Swan Bitcoin's podcast. They had Elliot Johnson. So he launched the EBIT ETF up in Canada, and that's a spot Bitcoin ETF from Canada. And so these are his thoughts on the SEC and this new BlackRock filing. So producer Chris, we're ready to go.
Is it a distinction without a difference, as many myself and many others think, in terms of how the SEC views the market and the spot market separate and apart from the futures market?
Well, I think when you're dealing with regulators, you have to at least respect the constraints that they have based on the legislation that they're trying to operate within. And so, you know, when we built our fund, the only time in my life I've been on the phone with a regulator at midnight on a Friday was launching EBIT. So, you know, this is a big lift, right? You have to get a bunch of people who have been focused on dealing with a certain structure within the financial industry to now look at things perhaps in a new way and see how the new thing fits within the old rules. And so just to preface my comments by saying I am not an expert on US ETF legislation, but I have a lot of friends who are. What I have heard in the past week is that the key to the BlackRock filing is the surveillance agreement they have managed to get put in place between Coinbase and NASDAQ as it relates to their ETF. And so within the rules, there is mention made of the need for there to be surveillance of a venue of significant size where the underlying asset that you're going to hold in your ETF trades. So significant size, Coinbase checks that box. And the surveillance mechanism is through NASDAQ's existing technology that the regulators use to surveil all kinds of other things that trade on NASDAQ all the time. This is something that is new to the BlackRock filing. And it's one of those things that when you look at it, you think, well, why is that in an ETF? You know, we don't really talk about those things in other ETFs. That's a clue that BlackRock knows what they're doing. And it's a clue that they've been talking to the right people because they're putting in place structures that seem a little bit unusual, but are meeting a particular need within the rules. And so what I think we kind of have evidence of as it relates to US Bitcoin ETFs is you've got the SEC on record saying that Bitcoin is a commodity, not a security, which is also, you know, supported by the CFTC Bitcoin futures. You've got now an exchange of significant size being Coinbase, providing data on their Bitcoin trading to NASDAQ, who has a surveillance system that allows the regulators to look at the trades of the underlying and then look at the trades of the ETF itself and perform its surveillance function that they're required to do as a regulator. That's a really, really big deal. And that's one of the reasons that we are so confident that BlackRock's going to be successful on this, because you would not put a feature like that into your product unless somebody had told you, you know, here's the checklist of things that you need, go ahead and go and do them. And so, you know, it's similar, in fact, to our.
All right. So Elliot Johnson there, who has launched the spot ETF in Canada, EBIT, he is saying that he is confident that BlackRock is going to get approved because of the data sharing agreement with NASDAQ and Coinbase. Of course, Coinbase is now being sued by, currently being sued by the SEC. So I don't know how that maybe works into his analysis.
They pushed for dismissal today, by the way.
Oh, Coinbase?
Coinbase, yeah, yeah. Well, what I see is, so let's back up for this for a second, just so everyone's on the same page as far as what ETFs do and how they function in the market and why big players are have always been sort of the main creators of these products and the main distributors and sellers of these products. Of course, it is exactly this piece where you're talking about the redeemability, because normally an ETF is made up of a bunch of different things. And then inside of that, there has to be some knowledge that the market isn't manipulated between the paper version of what they're selling as part of the package and the actual acquisition of the underlying asset. So this means there is some control on, or at least some awareness that BlackRock has to have the Bitcoin. They can't pull an FTX here. They can't say, oh, everyone on our platform has Bitcoin. And then we find out when we look at their balance sheet, they had one Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. They've got to be able to show the redeemability. Now, as I understand, this went on for years. That's why every ETF had to have its own application to the SEC for issuance in the first place, because they had to show these redeemability portals, gateways, if you will, existed. Now, I don't think they got into the actual flow of the assets that went between them. They just wanted to know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And what I see here, so the SEC's even backed off some of the big players like BlackRock in the past few years, trusting them on the redeemability thing and just giving them a license to create ETFs. That's a brand new thing, right? That only happened in 2019, that places like that venues like BlackRock or companies like BlackRock were given the ability to issue ETFs without any application in certain instances. So what I see here is exactly what everyone would imagine is the most important thing. It's all about the redeemability side. It's all about whether or not they actually are able to control the Bitcoin they're buying on behalf of the ETF, whether they you know are actually transacting in the underlying in a way that backs up what they're actually selling to the market. So to me, what I hear is everything that Bitcoiners should want to hear, that they're not going to get another paper buyer of Bitcoin. They're selling mm-hmm. paper Bitcoin for sure, but they've got to be a buyer of Bitcoin. Now, it's probably going to be Coinbase, but someone is making on-chain transactions somewhere. And these actual UTXOs are finding their way to BlackRock. That's what I hear.
Yeah, and a little bit later on in this interview, he talks about the surveillance. But actually, before I get to that, I want to say Coinbase, their suit, yes, they're pushing, I guess you said, to get it dismissed, but it was not about wash trading, right? Mm-hmm. It was more about its staking product. So where Binance was all about wash trading and commingling client funds, Coinbase was not on that same level as Binance. So this would fit for Coinbase to be considered by the SEC to be a good platform or exchange. Now, in the surveillance agreement or the surveillance stuff, I thought it was interesting how he detailed out that they need the way that works is they will look at the trades for a certain number of minutes every hour. And if it triggers their algorithm that there's a bunch of, you know, manipulation where you dump a bunch of orders, then withdraw them really quick, or you're trying to manipulate the price, they'll see that. Also, the last hour of the trading day, they do the entire hour. So it's like, you have to manipulate a gigantic multi-billion dollar market for the whole day, basically, without getting seen by these surveillance algorithms. So it's a very interesting the way that this surveillance agreement works. It's very similar to all other ETFs, the way that they're surveilled. So yeah, I thought that was very interesting. Any other comments to add on this before we jump to the next one?
Yeah, other than just to reiterate, I think this is positive for Bitcoin. I think this insists on-chain transactions and the same kind of demand for Bitcoin on-chain down the line. Now, I understand it's not the perfect way Bitcoiners would like it. I understand it doesn't fit everyone's idea. But at the top of these markets, what Bitcoiners, I think, want to see is that the demand for Bitcoin is so high that it can be expressed in terms of what's going on the chain itself. And this looks like that BlackRock isn't going to be subtracted from on-chain demand, or at least expressing more demand on-chain. So I think it's a very good thing. I really do.
Introducing the Gatekeepers issue, the Q1 2023 print release from Bitcoin Magazine. The winter editorial serves as both a reminder of the sacrifice whistleblowers have made in the pursuit of truth and the call to arms for a new generation. Order it now from BitcoinMagazine.com. There is a thin line between curation and censorship. There is an even thinner line between moderation and constitutional violation. The Gatekeepers issue explores the liminal space between these nuances, painting the fences worthy of demolition and those deserving respect. Bitcoin Magazine is for all Bitcoiners, the curious, convicted, and the maximalists. Subscribe today for exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Don't miss out on this piece of Bitcoin history. Subscribe now at store.bitcoinmagazine.com. Bitcoiners, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's both a free and paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com and embark on a path towards Bitcoin mastery. Get ready to seize every opportunity in the market with Bitcoin Magazine Pro today.
Awesome. Okay, let's go into the next one. This is James Seifert being interviewed by Natalie Burnell on her show. And he is working at Bloomberg on their ETF specialist team. So he is really, really knowledgeable in the US ETF space. And this is what he had to say to Natalie.
So one, I will say that based on the historical analysis of the SEC and everything they've said, they should probably disapprove this or deny it. Mm-hmm. But all those reasons you just said, the revolving door, a lot of connections are all true. So that's part of the reasons why we're more bullish on approval than most other people in our space. So me and my colleague, Eric Balchunas, we're pegging the odds around 50-50 at this point, because we just can't imagine BlackRock not knowing something. And this whole surveillance sharing agreement adds a little bit to it. Now, timeline. Basically, whenever, if you've been following on Twitter or anything, there's all these filings that have happened in the past. And right. Typically, there's always a delay, and every 45-day delay, and then 90 days later, they delay. And then after 60 days, they deny. It's very rare that they would delay and then approve, but it does happen but it's okay. With other things. But our view is that if they're going to approve it, they're probably going to approve it by the first deadline. So if they delay on that first deadline or before that first deadline, that's a bad sign that it's more likely that they're going to deny these things. Now, that said, I mentioned that ARK and 21 shares had filed in May, and their first 45-day deadline was due up on June 29th. Ironically, the SEC went early, 14 days early on June 15th, and issued a delay order. So now we're waiting for another response from them in August, I think it is. So this BlackRock filing, like I said, we don't know the exact timing. My guess is somewhere around August 19th would be the deadline for an SEC decision. But as I said, with ARK and 21 shares, they went 2 weeks early. So it's a deadline. Mm. It's not that they have to wait to that end. Usually they right. do tend to get closer to that 45-day period. But if you my guess is somewhere around mid-August is when we would get a response from the SEC on this BlackRock application. And like I said, if they delay, that's a bad sign, not a complete instance that they're definitely going to disapprove or deny. But if they delay, it's a bad sign. So we think if it's going to get approved, it's likely to get approved right off the bat. And that also squares nicely with what's going on at Grayscale, because we expect a decision likely in Grayscale's favor, in our opinion, before the end of the third quarter, so before September 30th. Wow. So all of a sudden, if this thing gets approved in August, then almost the Grayscale application and lawsuit is almost borderline irrelevant, because yeah. they've now approved spot Bitcoin ETFs, and then GBTC can convert to an ETF.
Wow. I mean, the first time I listened to that, I was like, this makes total sense. Everything kind of, happening in August, September timeframe. You'll be aware that I am a seasonal guy. I like these seasonal, the turning. So the end of the third quarter, end of the first quarter, those are the big crunch times for financial markets. That would fit perfectly in with a approval of BlackRock in August and GBTC in September. I mean, it just, couldn't add up more perfectly, in my opinion. So what are your thoughts, Nolan?
Well, I think there's even more to it. So think about that time frame right now and look at on the horizon a little more. So you see these products come online. They're going to be coming online simultaneous to the BRICS 2 meeting, where we're going to see if all these countries launch a shitcoin together. And then that'll come right when the Fed has their Jackson Hole meeting in late August. So you can see the Fed is going to have to counter-program what happens at the BRICS meeting, right? There's going to have to be some conversation. They're at least going to have to talk about the appetite that's out there for non-political money or non-US exposed, things that aren't exposed to the US political system necessarily. And all of a sudden with these new products, you're going to start to be able to cast Bitcoin. You're basically giving it the upgrade it needed to like be on this stage with these other participants and in the conversation. It's like a video game where, you know, you level up and you get new tools and new weapons or whatever. And it's like Bitcoin is getting the weapons at the exact right time to be in the conversation around, because otherwise it's still just Bitcoiners and what if people say and all that stuff. But you're going to actually be able to, when people are talking about the contrasting BRICS 2 shitcoin and the Fed getting together, reacting to that, you're going to have this conversation. People's minds are going to be opened up to what else is out there. And with these new tools and abilities, I think Bitcoin has a very credible presence to play in some huge conversations that'll be happening in that time of year. So, you know, very bullish. It's looking perfect for what everyone said was going to happen. And here's Bitcoin doing its thing again, right?
Yeah. To add on to that, about just the idea that you're going to, they might be wanting to front run the BRICS a little bit. And if they do this ETF in the US, it doesn't matter if the BRICS, because we do see other countries somewhat having some friendly conversations around Bitcoin in the BRICS too, right? Russia is going to be legalizing mining. They're really wanting to use it for import export type of things. And so like, we need to front run this. And how do we attract all of the Bitcoin into the US market? With a BlackRock ETF. I mean, how much money will flow in to, you know, that will be held at a US custodian in US markets by US investors. And that is almost like a checkmate on this, because most of the Bitcoin is going to be starting to flow into the United States, even though I would say a lot of it already is.
But hold on, rumors out there, total rumors. I don't want to start fake news on the show. And so I don't want to get people too crazy, but, and I have not substantiated the rumors. I'm just seeing them, but talk about China loosening its Bitcoin ban for consumer buys and based on everything that's going on in Hong Kong. So as great as it sounds, I would love to see those American markets have a real competition out there, because Bitcoin is always in its best place when both the average Chinese people show an appetite for it and the average American investor shows an appetite for it. When those two groups are working together, that's when Bitcoin really hits its pace. And because we didn't get to see that in the 2021 market. And we all remember what that was like in the 2017 market and the 2014 market. It's a big part. It's like the second booster rocket on the whole Bitcoin project. So look, you know, we don't know if it's going to happen in China, but I'm throwing it into the pile here with the BlackRock timing, exactly as you said, the timing.
If the BlackRock has ETF, I would say that would kick China in the butt to do something as well. So they don't want to be left behind. Just, I think that's part of the Hong Kong deal as well. They want to carve out a little bit of like a free trade zone with Bitcoin in Hong Kong. I don't know. Maybe they'll go further than that, like you say, but
A pleasant turn of events anyway in Hong Kong just for itself, because it was looking pretty bleak after the 2019 thing. And never forget, everyone, the excuse behind the Hong Kong protests and the legal change and the constitutional change, the excuse behind the extradition law of normal people from Hong Kong into mainland China was predicated on FATF and all the same people who are in Bitcoin's gears all the time, right? It was all the same FinCEN, FinTrack. It was all for them. That's why they needed to have extradition to mainland China. It was because of money laundering, they said, the smooth brains. So that's what they were actually saying, right? And that was it. So I think it's perfect that, you know, it really looked bad for Hong Kong and to see what's going on there now, just because of Bitcoin rejuvenating the markets over there, I think is great news.
Yep. All right. Well, on the point of attracting dollars into, or sorry, Bitcoin into your economy, we have a major holder stacking more Bitcoin. So this is MicroStrategy stacking more into their treasury, 12,000 more Bitcoins. Can you fill us in on what's going on here? Because I didn't follow it too much more than just the headlines.
It's not the same as the other times. They've gone to bonds before. They've issued debt. They found other ways to raise money. This was a stock dilution, right? This was a stock dilution. Now, I don't know what the supply of MicroStrategy stock is actually, right? So I'm not sure of the actual numbers. I'm not sure which class of stock were diluted. But this was a stock dilution to gather money in order to make this acquisition. So it's the first time this has ever happened where this novel, and there's nothing wrong with it, right? There's nothing wrong with it. But we should always categorize which way our lovable Michael Saylor is getting his hands on more Bitcoin. And this was a new way. And it does, if you read through the tea leaves and if you read through the people who are doomers about MicroStrategy, say, well, he's actually out of options, right? He's down to this, right? Now, I don't read it that way. I just say, like, this is indeed another clever way to fit more in without actually taking any more debt, without actually, you know, because this is not him increasing his risk on any haircut he might have to take, on any margin call there might be for the debt, right? None of that is actually here in this instance. He's not exposing that sort of risk to the balance sheet. This is really just a dilution of their actual stock. I don't know if it's common stock or which issuance, but that's
what. Well, BlackRock owns a bunch of their stock too, right? So right. Maybe they're trying to dilute BlackRock.
Yeah. They must have been happy.
But yeah, I have a slide here. Chris, if we could pull up number 6, that is Samson Mao's tweet. And he says, assuming a constant Bitcoin price of 30K, MicroStrategy buying 1.34 billion per year and Tether buying 900 million per year. In 2023, the two entities absorb a combined 22.74% of annual supply, 2024, 32%, and by 2025, 45% of new issuance. I mean, this is just huge, I think. And people haven't let this sink in that not even considering BlackRock, but just MicroStrategy and Tether buying. That's billions and billions of dollars a year that's coming into Bitcoin. So what do you think about that tweet there from Samson?
Well, I think Samson, you know, by doing the percentages brings attention to, you know, almost how immature the big buyers still are. Like, you can't imagine that going on for much longer. I see it more from the 2025 perspective. And I say, like, they're not going to get to the 50% of what's being issued because there's going to be so much more appetite there. So, you know, it's one of those self-correcting things. So, you know, when I see that, I'm you know, I think it's interesting that people are trying to use information asymmetry still at this period in the game, and it'll simply be remembered as such, right? And I just wanted to read one comment from the comment section here. He says, they have so much, this is from Seth Shepard on LinkedIn. He says, they have so much Bitcoin levered on their balance sheet, the equity dilution is worth it. Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good observation and makes sense why they were doing it that way.
Well, it's not that levered, but they do have a lot of leverage. I guess they have borrowed money to buy Bitcoin, but I think isn't the margin call that people were FUDing about, it's down like $3,000 or something.
Yeah,
like
it's no. I don't want to create any FUD about that or anything like that. I just wanted to say that there was no, like, people, you know, because we were talking about that margin call situation a few months ago, and indeed it was over exaggerated. I think at the time it was, you know, sub 10,000 or whatever accounting was going into determining what it was. But even then, you know, when you hear them making a large acquisition, your instinct is, well, they were just in danger. Are they changing their risk profile here? So that's why I thought it was important just to figure out how they did it, because I didn't think that they would be, you know, because of course the last time when you got that margin call thing, you did see Michael Saylor get removed from his position in the company, and people said it was because he had created this risk the company didn't need, and so they moved him to the board and blah 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 blah. So coming on top of that, I wanted to just, you know, find out how it was done, and so it made sense that it was done this way.
Yeah, it's a great way to lead, to be a leader of different interesting ways to buy Bitcoin, just like they were when they sold the bonds to buy Bitcoin. Now they're selling equity to buy Bitcoin, and also they're becoming more and more a Bitcoin company. I mean, they're they are a software company, but they are a software company now that has hitched their wagon to Bitcoin. So yeah, it makes total sense to me.
But not just a software company. Remember, you remember all the blockchain talk 6-7 years ago about putting supply chains on the blockchain,
yes,
you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, no one knew in the end what it was going to be was a supply chain optimization software company that simply held Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And in the end, that might just put the supply chain on the blockchain, right?
Yeah.
Because if they understand how to use the, you know, you could start to see all these wonderful products of factoring and invoice financing. Well, I don't know if factoring is a wonderful product, but invoice financing anyway. You know, these real contracts that make the world go round, you know, mm-hmm. when you say he made his whole company into a Bitcoin company, he just launched a, you know, because I helped program Bitcoin 2023, Bitcoin Amsterdam coming up on October 12th and 13th. And, you know, of course, I pay attention to the event space, and MicroStrategy did host a lightning focused show on how corporates can imbibe lightning into the company. So you can see they have a lot of desire for this. And if indeed what I'm saying makes any sense, they are this supply chain optimization software company. And now one of the best in the world has been so thoroughly orange pilled that it's very difficult to imagine they're not going to push for some of these innovative products that people were dreaming about when it came to trade finance, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And really what some people thought at the time were going to be the real booster for hyperbitcoinization, you know, it kind of didn't go in the same order, but we're here anyway.
Yeah. Well, another thing in hyperbitcoinization that people I think have maybe understated is states acquiring Bitcoin to hold on their treasury balance sheet. So this is a story out of North Carolina. I'll make sure to link it in the show notes, guys. I'll link to all this stuff in the show notes when I put out the podcast version of the episode. But so North Carolina, I do have a slide here. Let's bring that up. And you can see I underlined in red, they are mentioning Bitcoin by name, but they are talking about virtual currency. So they're trying to launch a study to look into bullion, you know, precious metals and virtual currency like Bitcoin or such as Bitcoin, to how it can protect their state against inflation. This has already now passed the House. It goes on to the state Senate and then signed by the governor. But so this isn't like they're imminently going to start stacking Bitcoin. But these people are starting to look at this. Okay, this is going to produce some data for lawmakers to look at. And then maybe South Carolina, South Dakota, wherever, these other states can look at the study by North Carolina and see what that means for them and maybe do their own study. So you can see how this is just right in line with everybody starting to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet. And I think it is fantastic. Nolan, what were your thoughts on this story?
I'm a big fan of states' rights and states exercising the powers they have in these areas. And I really do think that that's Bitcoin's route forward in America, where states start to realize their own, you know, risk of being involved with the Federal Reserve and the policies that come out of DC and the DC liabilities and the DC T-bill issuance. And because all of that has a direct effect, right? And that these places are being compelled now to exercise long dormant powers that they've had means that we are indeed leaving the era of a monopolistic issuance of one currency, and we're entering the era of private issuances and you know, very, very openly with nation states openly declaring it. And, you know, even if nothing comes of it, well, what can you immediately see? You can see things like El Salvador opening another one of their embassies, right? We've seen them in Lugano, for example, in Switzerland.
Yep.
Texas and El Salvador have a bilateral relationship when it comes to Bitcoin policy alone. So it's another place that's going to join that group and start to help Bitcoin spread in interesting ways. So, you know, even if nothing comes of it, if it seems like they have a well-articulated and coherent point, indeed, you can imagine support flowing in from places like El Salvador backing it up. And, you know, you saw this weekend in Guatemala, another country having big elections and a lot of the candidates promising to mimic Bukele in his, yeah, sure, both in the arrest anyone who has a tattoo on their face and just forget it, right? Like, don't tattoo your gang thing on your face and you don't get a trial. So there's that part they're talking about mimicking, but it's the general mimicking, right? So, you know, I won't go out and say that I have a quote from, I don't even know what the results were really, but I'll look into it more. But I do know that the Guatemalans are very interested in mimicking what's going on in general over in El Salvador. So yeah. You're going to see more of it. You're just going to keep seeing more of it, right?
Well, yeah, and it's, I mean, like you were talking about RFK, he's a big Bitcoin proponent, right? Like all these people in the U.S., it's become totally part of the conversation on not only BlackRock's lips, mm-hmm. but also on RFK's lips. I mean, mm-hmm. everywhere, Bitcoin is becoming institutionalized in that way.
And look, the other big news out of BlackRock this week is Fink backed off ESG and said he's embarrassed for even being involved in it. Now, I've been saying on the breakup since last autumn that it was going to be embarrassing to be associated with ESG. And I said it by about springtime, it would be like overtly embarrassing to be associated with it. And now he came out and said it. He just said it's embarrassing. So that's the kind of thing, right? Now that we see, you know, I also predicted last year that Europe, having gone through 1 year of paying the price for their energy illiteracy, would suddenly wake up and maybe realize that you know, Greta's feelings not as important as policy. And now Sweden this week has abandoned all ESG metrics and they're not going to get involved in that stuff. And
I saw they're putting in a new nuclear power plant or something.
Yeah. They're firing it. You know, they got Finland that's just giving away electricity to its citizens this summer. It's only so long now until they realize that they can't keep giving it away. Let's find a way to use the extra stuff. I'm working on getting the nuclear reactor people to Bitcoin Amsterdam, the ones from Finland that now have the largest reactor. I don't know in what, you know, Scandinavia or some large landmass. It's a special reactor, I guess.
Okay.
So, and it's, you know, sort of newly online. So it's coming, man.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about Bitcoin. We haven't really touched on the Bitcoin price all that much. I mean, we've talked about all this demand that is brewing from all aspects of politics and macro and everything, but let's take a look at the Bitcoin chart this week. So here is the 4 hour chart, and I just wanted to display this descending channel, and that's usually considered a flag. It's called a bull flag for people that don't know out there. And if it breaks out the same length as the pole, then that would take us up to 35,000. Let's go to the daily chart though. This is just a little bit, I don't like to spend any time really under the daily chart because the daily chart is what gives you the most information, in my opinion. But you can see the 50-day moving average in green. We have broken above that, and it is now sloping upward. The 200-day moving average is coming up pretty quickly on the price here. So this looks extremely bullish, like we're pressing against this one-time resistance. We want to break this badly. So what do you think about these two charts here so far, Nolan?
Feels about... Looks like I'm feeling about things, right? I think I feel the coil getting taut, and it just feels like, you know, as someone who's been through three market cycles as a professional, you know, the 2014, 2017, and 2021, they all kind of have a very similar feeling when you're coming out of the bear, and it feels like it this time. It looks the same, feels the same.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at the weekly chart, which is the next one. And that you can see where this red kind of bar of resistance comes from that we've been talking about for many months now. But this chart just looks like it is ready for takeoff. We talked about this will be the first ever golden cross of the 50, 200-day moving averages because we've never had a death cross before on the weekly chart. But as you can see, the Bitcoin price weathered that death cross storm, and we're going into the bullish phase of these crosses. So Nolan, what are you thinking about the weekly here?
Yeah, this is always my favorite one. And seeing that cross last week and watching it, you know, sort of mount, because I've been doing the show with you for a few weeks, it's been pretty fun. So yeah, it's, to me, this is the most bullish one. Audio's off.
All right. So, am I good now? Sorry.
You're good.
Okay. So I have a couple other charts we haven't looked at in the last few weeks. I have the dollar, and this one, you just mentioned the word coiling. We're coiling here in the dollar as well, but notice at a much higher level than back in 2021 when we were dipping down after COVID. And now we have a little bit of a higher high on this weekly chart. So, or sorry, a higher low on the weekly chart. So I think that that is fundamentally bullish. And I think the path for the dollar is higher because of the next chart. And that is the Chinese yuan, which we did look at last week. If we, Chris, if there we go. It's breaking down, continuing to break down even lower than what we had last week. And it is just looks horrible for the Chinese economy. I've talked about when they do their stimulus over there, there's nowhere for the money to go because the imports are dropping. They have closed capital accounts. And the only release valve they have for the stimulus is the currency. And that's what we're seeing right now is the currency is falling through the floor. So Nolan, any thoughts on the dollar and the Chinese yuan?
Yeah, again, you know, this is not one of my favorite predictions that I made on my show, but I said nothing but trouble for the Chinese economy going forward. Like, I don't see a way out of this. And I saw today the demographic numbers came in and they're real bleak. And you can only imagine they're worse than they say. You know, I've been operating under the assumption for a long time now that the way to understand a lot of their president's moves, President Xi, is that he's aware of the actual demographic situation and has had to, you know, respond in certain ways. And so, yeah, this is, I don't even see this finding a way out. This is not cyclical to me. This is a broken elevator and it's heading in one direction.
Absolutely. And I mean, it does make sense as well why they would want to attract a booming industry in that of Bitcoin in onto their shores, onto Hong Kong, and maybe onto mainland China, like you were talking about. But that's all I have for the charts. I do have a story, a big kind of overarching story about CBDCs. And maybe we should jump into that. I don't know. Have you noticed the CBDC discussion going on? I mean, you mentioned it, you said on your show yesterday, right?
Yeah, I definitely have been noting, talking about the BIS report and the appetite that's being expressed around the world. I think one of the things that caused it, if you remember, the complete mental breakdown of Nassim Taleb the other day on CNBC, I don't know if you caught it, but he looked incredibly pathetic and confused and you know, just leaking out nonsense. And one of the things he was saying was that, look, we got FedNow coming, right? Well, blah, blah, blah. And I think, honestly, he sounded so stupid that it caused people to start talking about it because you either had to explain what Taleb was talking about and defend him in some way, or you had to say, no, he is an actual idiot. And so it got, to me anyway, it started people, you know, started everyone sharing their large opinions. And so, look, you know, my prediction remains, we're going to have CBDCs. It's going to be tied to UBI. It's going to be political money. And it's going to be the reasons why BlackRock and all these other folks buy Bitcoin, because they don't want that sovereign risk. They don't want to get involved in money turning into food stamps. And the money coming from governments is turning into food stamps. And I don't think there's any way to prevent it. I don't think there's any way around it. I think it's just going to happen. Now, what does it mean for the world? To me, it continues to be good news for Bitcoin, because the whole world to me is like a Russian oligarchical situation now, right? Like, you can hear, you know, I heard the Fed Reserve last week. I could barely say the words, you know, the US dollar will remain the global reserve currency as long as the democratic institutions remain, right? Okay there, Mr. Powell, big time democracy in America. So, you know, the idea of that and even, you know, with the BIS thing. But look, there's a lot of people that are going to still need government help. I don't think that's going away. I think there is going to be a tool that will make public policy explicit in money, and it will be a UBI, and it might as well just be some stable coiny dollar thing that the government can take away and give you and extinguish and all of that kind of stuff. Now, it's not going to be for wealth. It is going to be for macaroni and cheese, right? It's not going to be convertible for everything you want, right? Government cheese. You know, there is ramen. Such a thing. A lot of people in the world don't know that. There's a thing in America, government cheese. Did you know? The government. Yeah. So the government cheese is going to back the dollar in the future, the food stamp dollar. But I'm not kidding. So, you know, the energy companies and, You know, because that's why, like you said, we love seeing the US dollar price. Price is everything. Price is everything.
Yeah.
As long as we're still in this conflict, there is a time when we're not going to care, because you're not going to want to measure Bitcoin in food stamps or McDonald's coupons. You're going to want to measure it in something else. And that's why I see the synergy between the energy industry and these large market players, commodity markets and others, literally using Bitcoin as a measurement of their wealth and just the number, the units in which their markets are described in. And and so
if the petrodollar is what people say it was, which I don't really agree all that much with, that the petrodollar was that big of a deal, but we definitely will have some sort of petro Bitcoin, right? Because
but hold on, the petrodollar in physical terms wasn't it, but it was part of the hypnosis of the way the Federal Reserve worked. It's part of what got you going, oh, what's in the basket? How do you measure the prices? Gold, you produce oil, right? It was part of the, you are getting very sleepy. We are making money and you will listen. It was part of that, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, you talked about Taleb, but also this week we had Powell making some comments in front of Congress. And I don't know if we touched on this last week, but so he said that, no, absolutely not. The U.S. is not going to have individual accounts at the Federal Reserve, like a retail CBDC. Mm-hmm. And so that was on top of what Taleb said. Then we have the ECB coming out with their big push. We have the IMF kind of doing a 180 flip on their narrative that they've been talking about CBDC. So I think this is a similar to how we talked about all of these things aligning at the same time for Bitcoin, making a perfect storm for Bitcoin with the BlackRock ETF and all this stuff. I think there's also just this entire monetary shift that's happening at the same time, that people know the dollar system is running out of steam. People know that the debt burden is too high, that this is based off of credit and debt, and it just is not going anywhere. We can't get back to normal. So they're looking for alternatives. That's why we hear about the BRICS currency. That's why we hear about CBDCs, and that also plays into Bitcoin. So not only are we, this episode, we're not saying that Bitcoin is facing a perfect storm, but I think the dollar system, the credit-based system, is facing a perfect storm. And that is, we can see that in the push for CBDCs. Any comment on that before I push into the actual news topics?
No, that's my exact reading alongside you. The system itself is coming into question, and that is fatal to the system, right? You almost can't question it, because if you start questioning, you'll start to realize what a bunch of spaghetti it all is. And, you know...
Yeah, it's all a confidence game. And before I go into the slides, that's something interesting that these guys, if you read about Silicon Valley Bank and how they had their debrief about, oh, it was all these speculators, or that they would, no, it was the headlines, the newspapers that reported on this that caused our bank to become insolvent. And it's silly. That's silly, because obviously they were insolvent before the bank run happened, but it was all based on confidence. And as long as the public has confidence in your bank, you can source the needed liquidity. Mm-hmm. You can source that. So they are right that it was the headlines that made them go insolvent right then. But it's that the entire system is just one big confidence shell game. Mm-hmm. So
it was the headlines, and you can't stop them from coming. Yes. They're going to keep coming.
That's true.
And you did this. They're not made out of nowhere. This isn't a propaganda machine against the US dollar system and the banking system. It's not that, right? It's self-motivated people that can only be hypnotized so many times before they're sick of it, right?
And it's scary when you think about it from a global perspective. You know, you could have some NGO or some Chinese interest produce some FUD about a bank that is solvent, but because the system itself is insolvent, that bank becomes instantly insolvent because of the headlines and rumors. So it would go vice versa too, but let's get into the CBDC stuff. So if we could first go to, let's go to slide number 8. This is from George Gammon. You guys probably all know who George Gammon is, but he is all on this CBDC bandwagon right now, thinking that it's inevitable. He did a series of shows for his YouTube channel detailing out all of this stuff. Now, I don't have anything against George Gammon. I think he is a clear thinker on most things, But the CBDC stuff, he just has bought into this idea that a CBDC is imminently coming. Like, the entire world is about to go onto this unified ledger of the BIS. And I think that is so far outside of reality that that is not going to happen. So this was my response to him, because he told me that his patience is wearing thin with me, even though all I told him was that blockchain, all the things, is so 2016. And he kept telling everybody, read the BIS paper. You don't understand. Read the BIS paper. And so I just was like, hey, have you read the hundreds of white papers of all these scam coins since 2016? They were saying the exact same thing. Tokenize the world, blockchain, all the things. And then I said, go into this about CBDCs are the exact same thing. Tokenize the world, put it on a ledger, instant viability and efficiency. Few stop to ask how. And in that whole BIS report, they don't use the word consensus once. And this is for a global ledger. How are you supposed to have a global ledger if the main point is about how to keep consensus on this global ledger? It's just a ridiculous thing. Let's go to the next slide. And this is, he's asking a question about how do we know that the US doesn't already have a CBDC, that the system isn't already using a CBDC, and they just haven't told us. It's kind of crazy to think that he was asking that question. And of course, I was like, well, how do we know that we're not living in the matrix? It's just, of course, it's an unanswerable question, because yeah, reality could be different, but reality is not different. And I stepped through that a CBDC would require explicit congressional authorization. And that is directly from the Federal Reserve. That is their official position, is they cannot launch a CBDC because that's a Treasury job. That is not a central bank job. I say reserves held at the Fed cannot buy a sandwich. So they're not digital payments, and that's what a CBDC is supposed to be for. So that's a pretty easy way to see that we don't have a CBDC. And also that savings and checking accounts are liabilities of commercial banks. They are not a liability of the Fed. Anyway, you can see I detailed out this in eight different steps. And yeah, so what are your thoughts on this? You've seen the George Gammon back and forth.
Yeah, I sure have. And I think what he's showing here is the same blind spot a lot of finance people have. And I had it, you know, as someone who got into this industry in 2013, the blind spot was more obvious at the time because I didn't know about cryptography. I knew very little about systems design, adversarial systems. And that's what I knew I had to learn. I had a law background, and so that's what I came in and learned about, right? Now, a lot of the people that come from Wall Street or something like that are still confused when they see something like Bitcoin, and they think of it as technology, and then they think of that as consumer technology. You know, I've made that point many times, iPhone 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, they're lulled into thinking it's about the 2.0. It's a very reflexive way of seeing technology that we've been trained to see technology as consumer technology for many years. But Bitcoin is not consumer technology. It's not. It's the opposite, right? It's the length of time it's built trust in it. It's the trust you're able to have in it because it's resisted attacks and things like that. And so that's why to this day, so if you remember, you know, in those early years of the industry, there was a lot of appetite amongst Bitcoiners even to have discussions about protocol design and consensus mechanisms and what works. You remember before XRP, the coin was launched, a lot of people were interested in Ripple as a consensus mechanism. Like, does it work? We don't know, right? It was supposed to be a kind of stable coin just because the consensus mechanism could scale. And
it was like a ledger. They don't even call it a blockchain, right? They call it a unified ledger, I think, doesn't Ripple?
Yeah, but it's one of these things where you can run a node, like, you know, but they just limited who could mine it. So there was still like MIT was like a fancy miner, and then Google mined it, and they had all these really super credible miners, right? That was the original design, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone studied this stuff at the time, and you wanted to know how this one worked versus that one, and you paid attention. Now, all that knowledge when the CBDC started to come out was useless because we can't tell what's under the hood. I still, to this day, as someone who studied every single one of these protocol systems as they came out and as they were shipped to the public, because I worked for CoinDesk in those years, and of course you had to see everything that came under the industry, right? So you'd look at the differences between a Monero, the technical differences. I'm not talking about the whatever you want to think about use case and all that. I mean the plumbing, like what pieces of cryptographic and computer science technology were combined to make this system. And so, you know, we had to sort of know the difference and nuance difference between all of it. To this day, as someone who has that experience, I was one of the people writing about that stuff and, you know, all those years ago. I don't know what's going on at all. Zero what's going on with the Chinese system. Nothing. It is not a unified ledger by any stretch of the imagination. So when someone says you can just create, like you said, there's no word of the, no sense of the word consensus. Because if you think of this stuff as consumer technology or just technology, right? Like, oh, you can build it. It's easy. Where's the product manager to create a unified ledger for the world and all of its assets, right? It's a little more complicated than that. What if it goes wrong? What about adversaries? What about attack vectors? Blah, 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 blah. So a guy like George Gammon, you gotta treat him as the newbie he is to this, right? Yeah. Most people in markets have a huge blind spot for even Nakamoto consensus, let alone any of the other scammy consensus things that are out there. Byzantine fault tolerance and all these different schemes, right? Now, all of this stuff might work in limited parties. I could see how some of the blockchain design could help a couple commercial banks to settle between them and their adversaries, but they're using a thing. You know, it's no different than what Liquid built for Blockstream. And, you know, that was Blockstream's vision, right? Was that you could create your own side consensus, plug it in and blah, blah, blah. So all that to say, you know, this just looks like someone who is waiting for the iPhone 15 and, you know, also has opinions on money, right?
Yeah. You during your talk there, I thought of the consensus mechanism for the Eurodollar system that we have right now. It is proof of confidence.
Yes.
So that's where we get the
proof of confidence. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as long as everyone can maintain a node and maintaining consensus, as long as we all have confidence in the system. But as soon as someone loses that confidence, then, you know, you get kicked off the network.
Yeah, which is a little bit where Gammon, because it is debt-based money, which is where Gammon is losing the train of thought of it here, because the substance of the money changes because of the medium. The medium is the message here, and the medium through which you're transacting this stuff is super important, which is what Milton Friedman always brought up when he talked about euro dollars themselves, because I want to make a dollar right now. It's debt. I owe you a dollar. I owe you a dollar, Ansel. We've just created money, right? And that's a problem. And Milton Friedman was talking about that a lot in the early days, that you can psychologically create dollars constantly because it's just debt. All you have to do is create a debt and then say it in dollars. And then suddenly, unfortunately for everyone who loves dollars, that's how easy it is to create. You don't have to prove anything. You can create it all the time, right? Which is why we don't understand the liability of euro dollars in the system. Really, truly, we don't, right? We don't know how many dollars the world knows. Like, correct. CBDC, are you talking about? Like, of what? Of what?
Correct.
CBDC, and of what?
And it can all just go to zero. So that's also a scary part. But we have to wrap. I didn't get to my last story about CBDC out of the EU. We'll probably cover that next week. But anyway, guys, thank you for joining. Ansel Lindner, this is FedWatch. Go ahead, Nolan. Go for it.
Is there a show next week? Because it's July 4th. Yeah, I guess it's not July 4th. July 4th is Tuesday.
Yeah, it'll be July 6th.
Thursday for a second. Yeah, we're good. Okay, great. Awesome, Ansel.
Yep. So, guys, check out.
What is up, audio listeners? Thank you for enjoying another episode of FedWatch. Down in the show notes, you will find all the appropriate links to our social media, the original version of this podcast, and community links. Also, check out bitcoinandmarkets.com, where I put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday. And there you can also help support the show by signing up to become a paid member. See you next time.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
my fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaas to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaas Event Forum, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.